This is the Preservation Technology Podcast, bringing innovation to preservation. The Preservation Technology Podcast is a production of the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training, a unit of the National Park Service. I'm Catherine Cooper. I am here with
Gilroy Chow. I'm currently the president of the Mississippi Delta Chinese Heritage Museum, a retired engineer.
I'm Freda Kwan. I'm the vice president of the Mississippi Delta Chinese Heritage Museum, and I'm a retired librarian.
I'm Carolyn Chan. I was born and raised in Greenville, Mississippi. I'm an elder among the group now, and I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I have been a classroom teacher.
I'm Randy Kwan, and I teach at Hines Community College in Pearl, Mississippi, and I teach film and TV production.
I'm Emily Jones. I'm the archivist and the curator for the Mississippi Delta Chinese Heritage Museum.
As a museum, Delta State University and the City of Cleveland, we were able to make available things that reflect the heritage that the Mississippi Delta Chinese have shared for, we think, over 150 years. Their presence has been here in the Mississippi Delta, sometimes with a larger population, and currently saying that there are probably about 500 Mississippi Delta Chinese now that are remaining or have come in since. But we're really trying to highlight the history and the culture of the Mississippi Delta Chinese.
There's not much known outside of Mississippi on our heritage in the area. So we basically wanted to preserve our lifestyle and make people more aware of it.
The Mississippi Delta Chinese Heritage Museum is a place to gather the history and the artifacts that tell the story of the Chinese migration to the state of Mississippi, how they were accepted maybe in a certain way, a limited way, as they fulfilled the need of providing a place for African Americans to come and shop for their groceries during the Reconstruction period, a place that they felt comfortable with. And of course, we were restricted as to where we could operate and even immigrate to the United States, and only as merchants could we come, the early settlers. And that was the way that they were able to come to Mississippi.
There was a time when there were Chinese grocery stores across the entire Mississippi Delta. When we say the Mississippi Delta, we're talking about from Memphis to Vicksburg, from the Mississippi River over to the hills of Mississippi. We have actual documented history of grocery stores in each of the Delta towns. We talk about Clarksdale having over 25 stores. Greenville having over 50 stores, Cleveland 30 plus stores, and in small towns like Ruville and Marks, Yazoo City, Chinese grocery stores existing, some of them side by side, sometimes across the street from one another. And so we are trying to capture and preserve that heritage of the families, of what they did and how they persevered and worked, overcame obstacles, personal, financial, even within the community sometimes, that they not only existed, but they thrived.
Well, I think if we're talking an origin story, just a little bit deeper into that, my perception of it was, first of all, as a grad student, I had gone to Frida's husband, John Paul Kwan, and he had told me then, back like in 1999, that he had this idea to create a Chinese Heritage Museum or a Chinese Mississippi Delta Chinese Museum, but it was supposed to be in Greenville. And then when I came back to work here at Delta State, Frida and I got to be really good friends. Thanks, Frida.
That's how it started.
And then when John Paul Kwan passed, it was time.
We were so busy, I guess, just living our lives. You know, our parents were here, but we regretfully didn't ask them all the questions that we wish we had. Mm-hmm. And so it finally came to a time, and my husband was still alive then, and he realized it, and he got a grant with Dr. Thornell, who was
provost.
John got this humanities grant and went about the Delta and interviewed. I mean, this was the nucleus yep. of the interviews that we have that kind of started the museum. Mm-hmm. And it was true that initially everybody thought, oh, we need to put this museum in Greenville because that's like the metropolis mm-hmm. back then. So that was the thought for a long time. So anyway, they gathered those interviews. John passed away in 2006. And then I think it was around 2009 or 10 that those of us who remained in the Delta realized if we're going to do a museum, we need to get together and do this. We met actually up here in the archives, Emily and
everybody shared the vision at the same mm-hmm. time. We're actually second generation because mm-hmm. we consider our parents first generation or grandparents first generation. But realizing that unless somebody went out and captured this information now, that it would be another layer of information lost. And so it came together at the right time and had the right skill sets mm-hmm. of law, mm-hmm. art, architecture. We have the right people in place and we're happy to see them. You got to see that a little bit this morning as they interact and play. That, you know, that's what it takes. It takes a large number of people with different skills and different personalities to come together and enjoy doing the things that we're doing.
Yeah.
And then as far as setting up the museum, I can remember Emily was calling for things. She would have brochures. Okay, if you have this, you know, and people, like I said, are thinking of we need to bring museum quality things. Well, so we learned from Emily that it can be whatever that's in your daily living. So we ended up bringing our kitchen table. Or those apple crates, you know, that my dad, these were boxes that fruit came in, and those became our chairs. And
or Jerome sculptures.
Oh, the art.
The
you know.
Art, that is so unique, mm-hmm. Is laminated apple crate ends.
Mm-hmm.
And then he turned them into art figures. How did mm-hmm. you learn that? Well, he actually shaped the sausage.
Right, he started out shaping pork sausage made into a pig.
Okay. And see, I thought everybody always had that at their grocery stores because I grew up in Greenville.
Mm-hmm. And saw that.
And saw that at everybody's deli mm-hmm. counter. I thought everybody
your
did that.
Wrap meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you make the meat into a face. Now it sounds weird. But.
But it worked. The apple crate in the museum is the apple crate you see Frida as a young girl sitting on mm-hmm. because that was the furniture of the day. And she didn't think anything of it. I mean, that's where she sat. And now, if you go to Frida's home, you'll see some fine furniture.
Yeah, we actually bought those chairs. I mean, we grew up poor, but we didn't know it. You know, I mean, we had shelter, we had love. We went to church, we went to school, and we worked alongside our parents. You know, obviously, maybe didn't have a fine car or anything, but we had all our basic needs. And I don't know. I mean, we never felt deprived.
We need to talk about the history of people and how they get along with each other. And that's the reason why I got involved at the museum in Mississippi. And with the Chinese American Citizens Alliance, it's a national organization. So I've been involved with people who were involved with the Chinese American Museum in Los Angeles, and also going to the Smithsonian and some of the museums because of the advocacy trips that we were involved in DC. I was exposed to a lot of Chinese culture and felt that our history is very unique in Mississippi among the Chinese Americans. So that I came before we actually got our charter for the Mississippi CACA, a Chinese American Citizens Alliance, chartered in Mississippi. We brought an exhibit of what we were doing in Albuquerque, and it was just sort of a little cardboard exhibit about the history of the Chinese in New Mexico and in Albuquerque. And so we come to the meetings to try to help the Mississippi organization get started. And we actually encouraged them to start talking about having a museum in Mississippi. I think we really wanted it in Greenville, but it turned out it was not the best place to have it. And I agree now that the best place is in Cleveland because it is affiliated with the university.
For me, I was actually involved with the CACA in Los Angeles. of course, originally from Mississippi, moved out there in 93 or 92, and got involved with the CACA out there. And in 2003, I moved back here. And through, you know, the involvement with the CAC out there, you know, Aunt Carolyn and my mom, we basically created a CACA organization here, or charter here. And then that eventually led to the involvement with the museum.
What are your hopes for the museum going forward?
First of all, can I just frame this with, we do not have an official 5, 10, or 15-year strategic plan.
Yet.
We've been talking about making one happen since the board put together. And I will say a plan is always good, but being open and flexible to whatever comes through the door has really worked for us.
Hopefully that the museum will flourish. You know, through, I guess, various events that have been on TV and documentaries that have been covering the Mississippi Chinese, I think there's a greater awareness of it. And it seems to be a greater interest in our lifestyle and our history, which is always great to see. I just hope it keeps growing.
I agree with you. And then the thing that I've seen that's been happening is that people are now taking their own children and their grandchildren back so they can see, how did my grandma and my grandpa go through all of this? What did they do? What did they contribute? And they have a respect for what their grandparents and their forebears went through. And I think that also people who are not Asian American come and they could not believe how we survived this. What did you do to, we had to go through this, and we have a respect for you for what you've gone through.
We love the idea that we partnered with Delta State and with the city so that sustainability is always a question mark. We have struggled raising funds. We're pretty good right now. We are always looking to improve and add to the archives and the exhibits, but sustainable is a goal. Improvement is a goal. There's nothing wrong with what we have, but you can always add to the story. And, you know, the current generation, probably need to talk about that. Some of the descendants, and our children, our grandchildren.
I would say as a board, we are reactionary and try to do our best to field the requests for access to the information. If we were proactive, we would probably give people stuff that they don't want to know yet. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good word, that we are reactive. But enough requests come in that it keeps us very busy.
I'm very proud of the board. I don't really know how to run a board, but they're very
And they're
good.
Everywhere. They're in Hawaii. They're in New Mexico. Both coasts.
Texas, Gary, and Virginia.
And the local people who can put their feet on the ground here do.
Susan, Harry.
Not often do you see a board that will put the sweat equity in. What I do know of boards is that boards raise money and they advocate on behalf of whatever they represent. This board actually does the work, the heavy lifting, going out and talking to each other and promoting the museum, an effort, a homecoming, a reunion. We don't have a publicity campaign or a communications program or anything like that. It's word of mouth.
And it
gets
works.
Things out.
Mm-hmm. It works. It's working.
Yeah. I'm very proud of what we have achieved. Mm-hmm. And as long as we all keep working together, I think we've got a good future.
Yeah. Yeah. The long-term plan is don't let anybody move.
If you do, you have to go find us a replacement, huh?
Thank you so much for talking to us.
Nice to talk with you too, Kathy.
Same here.
Thanks for coming.
This was a presentation of the Preservation Technology Podcast, produced by the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training. To find more podcasts like this one, please visit our website,